Pripyat is a Ukrainian ghost town near the northern border with Belarus. Not a single resident lives there today. However, in 1985, roughly 50,000 people inhabited the then Soviet city, originally built to accommodate the employees of the Chernobyl nuclear power plant. In 1985, the city had 13,414 apartments, large hospital, over 25 cafes, a movie theater, an art school, a museum, gyms, indoor swimming pools, two sports stadiums, Central Park with a giant Ferris wheel, much more. And then at 1:23 a.m. on Saturday, April 26, 1986, the number 4 reactor heated up to more than 100 times its usual operating power, which is very, very bad. Reactor number 4 exploded, and then several hundred staff and firefighters tackled a blaze that burned for 10 days and sent a plume of radiation around the globe. And it is a globe, flat earthers. In the worst ever civil nuclear disaster the world has ever seen, more than 50 reactor and emergency workers died, and in the years since, many more have died. How many deaths can be attributed to Chernobyl? How disastrous is a nuclear disaster? Will no one be safe to live in the former town of Pripyat? Are you safe from a nuclear disaster? What led to the Chernobyl nuclear disaster? Am I saying nuclear correctly? I'm saying it so many times. So much explored, examined, and evaluated in this atom bomb of a suck, this full nuclear edition of Time Suck.
You're listening to Time Suck.
What's going on, suckers? Back in the suck dungeon today, and it feels good. I'm Dan Cummins, and this is Time Suck. Time Suck is brought to us today by a part of the Time Suck family. It's brought to us by Melissa Soroka, Hair and Makeup Studio in Maitland, Florida, part of the greater Orlando area where so much of Time Suck is located. The Melissa Soroka Hair and Makeup Studio is conveniently located in Maitland, Florida, next to the Publix Shopping Center, 525 Sebela Parkway, Maitland, Florida, Suite 202. And that's S-Y-B-E-L-I-A. Hope I'm saying that right. Melissa specializes in vivid color, also does hairstyles for the whole family. She's available for hair and makeup for weddings and family photos. She does HD camera-ready makeup for movies and commercials so people can enjoy watching you on screen instead of focusing on counting your pores. Damn you, 4K. You can find more info at melissasoroka.com. Check out her photos when you follow her on Instagram at instagram.com. You know, handle Melissa Soroka Hair. And it's M-E-L-I-S-S-A-S-U-R-R-O-C-A. Link available in the episode description. Make it easy for you guys. So just click that link. And she's having some limited edition Time Suck magnets made up to give to Time Suckers who come in and get a service. And who's making those? Her husband, Sebastian Soroka, part of the Danger Brain crew who designed the app avatars, the recent merch, right? The logo. For the Time Suck and for the Secret Suck. So if you're in the Orlando area, check out Melissa Soroka. And part of the Time Suck family with Danger Brain. Can't recommend her enough. I know Lindsay is going to get her hair did next time her and I are out in Orlando. Thanks, Time Suckers, for all the recent iTunes reviews. And it is iTunes, not iTunes, I guess I say quite often, as someone pointed out recently. Well over 3,000 right now, and the overwhelming majority of those reviews are positive. It means so much. Help spread the suck so effectively. And the negative ones usually make me laugh so hard, like a recent one-star review from 123 softball chick, Allie, who posted a subject line of really bad. Fair enough. You know, direct to the point. You know, conveys your opinion. And then she posts, I tried to give this podcast another chance, mostly because he covers serial killers, which is one of my favorite topics. He talks way too fast for starters. All right. That's, again, another fair point. I have to work on slowing down here and there. I get excited. I get impatient to get into the next bit of info, get passionate. And then she says, all the impressions / accents he does are horrible. Hey, that's not true. Actually, you know what? That is kind of true. If you are a fan of if impressions are your thing, like very, perfectly done impressions, if that's your thing, if you're like a student of accents, you know, maybe you're an actor yourself. And, you're into the method people and you want it to be done perfectly and it just takes you out of everything if the accent isn't done perfectly. This is not the podcast for you. And then she says, he laughs at himself. He's the only one laughing. Okay. Now here's where you start to be a trolly douche, Allie. I'm the only one on the fucking podcast, you idiot. So, of course, I'm the only one laughing in the room. It's not like there's another person who just never talks and is always quiet. And I do realize you're probably saying that, you know, as in like no one out there in the world. And that's a bold statement. Other people are laughing. Read the other posts to figure that out. Also realize that I made a living as a comic for over a decade and a half. Other people are definitely laughing, you sad, angry troll. But then she says, while I can tell he does his research. Okay, all right, positive note. I appreciate that. And then she says, the ad-libbing makes it impossible to listen to. I'm not one that thinks true crime can't be funny. It's just that his jokes are horrible. God, I do love this. I just love it when someone becomes so enraged by free content that they feel the need to not only just like move on, which I totally get. It's like, I don't want to listen to that anymore. I get that. I get this isn't for everyone. Oh, man, I've done comedy so long. I've pissed off so many people in live shows. Believe me, I get that this is objective. I understand it in a way that people who haven't performed as an artist or put art out there will never understand. but then what I don't do is like, just like, take the time to be like, what the fuck? I fucking hate this so much. Like, I've literally never done that on any review of anything. I've just gone away. Oh, man. Like I hate Yelp trolls, but I get in the restaurant kind of, you know, area that if you go out, you've paid money, you expect a certain kind of food, and then if it's really bad service, I do get the negative review there. I'm just always so confused when it's like when you're doing that to free content where it's like, hey, man, I took fucking 10 minutes of my time to listen to something I had nothing to do with making, and it wasn't perfect for me, so fuck you. That's such an angry person. And I'm angry, but I feel like I'm a little more rational with my anger. But if you do like me, come see me live. I'm at Hilarities in Cleveland, Ohio this weekend, where there will be other people laughing. I promise. Allie, come fucking check it out. If you're happening to give this podcast another chance, come listen, pop in, and then you can be like, all right, other people laugh, but I still fucking hate this son of a bitch. And then, fair enough. March 22nd to 24th. Not sure when I'll be back in Cleveland again, so get there. And just a few weeks, I'll be in Charlotte, North Carolina, April 8th, Atlanta, Georgia on the 9th, Birmingham, Alabama on the 10th, Huntsville, Alabama on the 11th. Let's talk about Flat Earth. The Flat Earth tour continues. Fucking NASA employees out there. I will be in Nashville, Tennessee on the 12th, Houston, Texas on the 13th, Dallas, Texas the 14th, San Antonio, Texas the 15th, Salt Lake City, Utah. I will be there the 20th and the 21st. And then San Francisco, Sacramento, and Phoenix coming up right up afterwards in May. Another live Time Suck podcast in Spokane on May 6th. So come check out the Flat Earth Tour. More tour dates at dancummins.tv. Thanks to all the Secret Space Lizard signups these past few weeks. Waiting to hear back on if I'm getting that psychic reading, by the way. I'm going to keep emailing David Icke Psychic. Love how fun and weird things are getting. Now, time to go nuclear. And just so you know, I know the correct pronunciation is new. Nuclear. Nuclear is another way I say it sometimes, and just know that variant is accepted, as I pointed out in the past by Merriam-Webster. So calm the fuck down, pronunciation Nazis. Don't go nuclear if I say nuclear. And stay tuned for this week's Time Sucker updates to hear more info from listeners about Chernobyl. So what actually happened with Chernobyl? This is an important question to ask. There is the official Soviet narrative regarding what happened, but we can't entirely trust that. Before the fall of the Soviet Union in 1991, the state controlled the media, state controlled journalists, and journalists reported what the state wanted them to report, what the official narrative was supposed to be. This was a huge, embarrassing disaster for the Soviet Union. U.S. President Ronald Reagan, Secretary of the Communist Party Mikhail Gorbachev, they were still involved in the Cold War. So Gorbachev didn't want to look like a fool, and worse, didn't want to look weak, especially in the eyes of the U.S. So the nuclear arms race had become central to the Cold War, and a nuclear blunder of any sort would be a huge embarrassment. So the Russians were in damage control mode for sure from the beginning regarding what caused the reactor to actually melt down, and then afterwards, the true extent of the damage caused by the meltdown. And what's the big deal with radiation anyway? I mean, is it really that bad for you? I doubt it. I mean, I used to hike around the old Hanford Superfund site near eastern Washington's Tri-Cities, heavily radioactive, America's most contaminated nuclear waste site, not really that far from where I grew up in central Idaho, and I used to catch a variant of bass native just to that area. It's the large and smallmouth, slow-moving, five-headed bass fish thing, perfect for romantic dinners because it provides its own light. And I'm fine. I definitely have less than 15 toes, and I don't have that much webbing in between any of them. No, of course it's dangerous. Yes, at certain levels, radiation will melt the fucking bones right out of your head. First off, let's acknowledge that radiation is everywhere, though. There's a low level of background radiation perpetually around us all at all times, right? The sun, soil, rocks, even animals give off low levels of radiation. Damn it. Can't even go on a hike to get away from radiation. Actually, it sounds like hiking is full of radiation. Nice try, Mother Nature. Looking all serene and shit. Always trying to lure me into your radiation field. Not this guy. So how does it hurt us? How does radiation hurt us? Catherine Higley, director of the Oregon State University Department of Nuclear Engineering and Radiation Health Physics, Professor Smarty Pants herself, explains, as a radioactive material decays or breaks down, the energy released into the environment has two ways of harming a body that is exposed to it. It can kill directly, it can directly kill cells, or it can cause mutations to DNA. If those mutations are not repaired, the cell may turn cancerous. So these are two categories of injury, somatic injury and genetic injury. Somatic injury is damage that occurs to the organism exposed to high levels of ionizing radiation and does not include reproductive cells. Effects like sickness, hair loss, internal bleeding, you know, things that are, you know, visible shortly after exposure. Other illnesses such as cancer may take a number of years to appear, and that's somatic injury. Genetic injury is damage to the reproductive cells due to exposure to high levels of ionizing radiation and can be passed down to an organism's offspring, perhaps generations later. Like some potential illnesses could be birth abnormalities and cancer. Somatic and genetic injuries are not solely caused by ionizing radiation. Many chemical pollutants found in our environment, such as cadmium, lead, mercury, can also cause similar injuries. Radiation can damage at a DNA level. That's crazy. If a strand of DNA is damaged by radiation, the cell may repair the damage, die, or kill itself through a process known as apoptosis. Apoptosis. I wonder if this is why my son Kyler has three nipples or why my daughter Monroe has four testicles. Might be all those Hanford hikes. I don't know. Now I'm starting to second guess it. And you don't need to have lived like near some nuclear catastrophe to have experienced radiation. Again, we've all experienced it. We're all experiencing it right now, especially you piney suckers. And radioactive materials can't occur naturally. Uranium is present in the Earth's crust, is brought to the Earth's surface through coal mining, among many other ways. And then there's radioactive waste, which is the byproduct of nuclear power generation or nuclear weapons manufacture or working with highly radioactive materials. Nuclear waste is the material that nuclear fuel becomes after it is used in a reactor. From the outside, it can look, you know, exactly like the fuel that was loaded into the reactor. Assemblies of metal rods, enclosed fuel pellets, etc. But since nuclear reactions have now occurred with or around this metal, the contents aren't quite the same when they come back out. Nuclear energy is released when a nuclear fuel atom snaps into two, and the key component of nuclear waste is the leftover smaller atoms known as fission product, and this is radioactive. And nuclear reactors in the U.S. alone produce more than 2,000 metric tons of radioactive waste a year, according to the Department of Energy. And some of this waste will be lethal to humans for another 250,000 years. Man, so much for truly clean energy. And a lot of that waste is being stored at the Waste Isolation Pilot Plant 26 miles east of Carlsbad, New Mexico, less than 100 miles from Earth's butthole, Roswell, New Mexico. Inside joke for those of you who heard the Norse gods suck. And this waste is being placed in rooms 2,150 feet underground that have been excavated with a 3,000-foot thick salt formation, or excavated within this 3,000-foot naturally occurring salt formation. It's part of the Salado and Castile formations, where salt tectonics have been stable for more than 250 million years. So they go way out in the desert. It's like this big old salt block underground. They like dug into the middle of it, and that's where they've been piling our nuclear waste. Just toss it in the salt hole, man. Just toss those nukes in the salt hole, and then harvest that salt and feed it to your enemies. Would you like some more salt, person I hate? You'll know you have the right amount when your tongue falls off and just lands on your plate. Hail Nimrod! Now, luckily, not all forms of radioactive waste remain radioactive for 250,000 years. Radioactive iodine, one of the byproducts of nuclear power creation, an example of nuclear waste that can be released in a meltdown, doesn't even last anywhere near that long. It tends to be absorbed by the thyroid gland. It can cause thyroid cancer. But radioactive iodine is short-lived and will be around only about 2 months after an accident, says Andre Bouvel of the National Cancer Institute, who has studied radiation doses from the fallout of the 1986 Chernobyl explosion in Ukraine. So if the exposure to the air comes after that time, radioactive iodine does not pose a health risk, is what he says. Radioactive cesium, another reactor byproduct, on the other hand, can stay in the environment for more than a century. but it does not concentrate in one part of the body the way that radioactive iodine does. The Chernobyl accident released a plume of radioactive materials into the atmosphere in a fraction of a second. In the following years, the incidence of thyroid cancer among those exposed as children increased in Ukraine and nearby countries. The cancer showed up between 4 and 10 years after the accident. Children were exposed to radioactive material mainly from eating contaminated leafy vegetables and dairy. There have been no detectable health effects from exposure to radioactive cesium after the accident. So in general, it takes a pretty high dose of radiation to increase cancer risk. Americans are exposed to about 3 millisieverts each year from natural sources such as the sun. And even at that low amount, consistent exposure to the radiation present in those ultraviolet rays can give you skin cancer. A person's risk of getting sick depends on how much radiation the body absorbs. Those exposed to high levels of radiation, about 2,000 millisieverts, could develop actual radiation sickness. And that shit is no joke, man. Radiation sickness is often fatal and can produce symptoms such as bleeding, shedding of the lining of the gastrointestinal tract, cause nausea, vomiting, bloody diarrhea, mouth ulcers, and the most terrifying symptom of all, spontaneous bleeding. I don't have a medical degree, but spontaneous bleeding sounds like just about the worst symptom, you can have for any disease. Just, this is bad, doc. I'm puking blood. No, we can work with that. I'm also shitting blood. That seems bad. I mean, and that's bad, right? Yes. Blood defecation is quite severe, but I can work with it. There's still plenty of hope to be had. Oh, and lately I've just started spontaneously bleeding. Just blood just pours out of my skin, my ears, and my eyes. Holy shit, what the hell are you doing here? What, are you trying to kill us all? Listen, son, medically speaking, you are fucked. Now go crawl out in the woods and die alone, you selfish son of a bitch. Yeah, so, 2,000 millisieverts of radiation, real bad. Even a total dose as low as 400 to 600 millisieverts can also be lethal, can also cause spontaneous bleeding. Ugh. Or, according to what I've read in some comic books, it can be super awesome and you can become Dr. Manhattan, for example, right? The source of inspiration for the white eyes of the Time Suck logo. He began as a simple lab technician named Dr. John Osterman. When he was trapped in a radioactive particle test, his entire body was destroyed down to the molecular level, but he was able to rebuild his body and return as Dr. Manhattan. Thank you, Alan Moore. Thank you, Dave Gibbons. Thanks, DC Comics, for publishing The Watchmen. So there's that. So, I feel like, you can just kind of take your chances. If you come across some highly radioactive material, if you accidentally find yourself in the middle of like a nuclear weapons manufacturing plant or something, and there's like a big room that says, do not enter, molecular disintegration possible or something like that, I just feel like it's a fucking coin toss. Sure, maybe you're going to spontaneously bleed out, or maybe you're going to be able to become Dr. Manhattan and project yourself to other worlds at will. And again, for reference, a chest x-ray is only about 0.02 millisieverts, according to the International Atomic Energy Agency, and people are exposed to about 2.4 millisieverts per year from natural background radiation in the environment. So that's just a little primer on radiation before we get into this whole Chernobyl disaster. Now, let's lead up to that fateful day in 1986 when shit went sideways, with a little Time Suck timeline that includes a brief history on the international development of nuclear power.
Strap on those boots, soldier. We're marching down a Time Suck timeline.
...1895, Wilhelm Röntgen discovers the X-ray. In the process of conducting various experiments and applying currents to different vacuum tubes, old Smarty Pants discovers that despite covering one in a screen to block out light, there still seem to be some rays penetrating through to react with a barium solution on a screen he'd placed nearby. After several experiments, including taking what would become the world's first X-ray photo of his wife's hand and skeletal structure with these new rays, he named them X-rays temporarily as a designation of something unknown, and the name stuck. And according to the 2012 edition of the Collins Scrabble Words Dictionary, you can play that word. Right? You can play X-ray with no hyphen, just X-R-A-Y. Always need those X words with Scrabble. 1896, this initial discovery is followed in 1896 by Henri Becquerel's discovery that uranium salts gave off similar rays naturally. Though originally thinking that the rays were given off as phosphorescent uranium salts after prolonged exposure to the sun, he eventually abandoned that hypothesis. Through further experimentation, including non-phosphorescent uranium, he instead came to recognize that the material itself gave off the rays. So they're just figuring out that this radioactive material is emitting its own form of light back in 1895, 1896. And then Henri's, a French doctoral student, won Marie Curie. She named this newly discovered phenomenon, these rays emanating from substances such as uranium, this process of atomic nuclei breaking down and releasing high energy particles, radioactivity. She called it radioactivity in 1898. And the particles being released are called radiation. And years later, radiation would be used to create the recipe for Monster Energy drinks. To this day, a small amount of the profits from Monster Energy drinks make its way to the descendants of Marie Curie. And that is total nonsense. Monster Energy is not radioactive that I am aware of. But if an article came out saying that it was, not shocked. Random trivia, Marie Curie, was not ethnically French. She was a naturalized French physicist originally from Warsaw, Poland. Maria Salomea Sladowska. After all the shit I've given Polish listeners, I felt necessary to throw you this bone. She was a Polish genius. Turns out they for sure exist. Marie Curie would go on to become the first woman to win the Nobel Prize. She'd go on to win two Nobel Prizes in two different sciences. Also become the first woman to become a professor at the University of Paris. So, you know, yay Polish people, yay women, and I don't know, hail Lucifina. Between 1898 and 1902, the Curies, Marie worked with fellow researcher and husband Pierre, published jointly or separately a total of 32 scientific papers, including one that announced that when exposed to radium, disease tumor-forming cells were destroyed faster than healthy cells. Using radiation in cancer treatment can be traced back to Curie. Pretty amazing. She deserves her own suck someday for sure. Unfortunately, they didn't know at the time that radiation, in addition to being able to cure cancer, could also ironically cause cancer. Prior to Curie's research, the atom was considered unbreakable and also to be the smallest thing in existence. Curie discovered that radiation was the product of atoms splitting apart. Her research also led to this insane, and I'm not making this up, this insane radiation craze in the earliest 20th century that I didn't know about before I started researching this episode. Holy shit. Once people found out that radiation could attack tumors, it became assumed that it was kind of this cure-all. You know, they could take care of all kinds of stuff. Like it was this new miracle substance. One doctor wrote in the American Journal of Clinical Medicine, "Radioactivity prevents insanity, rouses noble emotions, retards old age, and creates a splendid, youthful, joyous life." Yeah. Turns out it does exactly none of that stuff. But suddenly, watches, clock faces, gun sights, instrument panels, fingernail polish, even children's toys are glowing with radiation. I swear. You can do some Google research. If you do some image searches, you find all kinds of hilarious old ads and packaging. The United States Radium Corporation, for example, opened in 1914 in New York City, and they hand-painted all sorts of items with radioactive radium in their New Jersey factories. And the employees of the factories of these corporations would lick their brushes to keep the tips pointed during their work, ingesting radioactive particles each and every time they did that. And years later, their teeth and skulls began to disintegrate. And then these poor people, dying and unable to work, made their way south to the Jersey Pine Barrens and began popping out so many nuke babies. "Where, looky here now, I got some puke, tastiest nuke I ever did lick out of my woman's beard. Well, looky here now, with a full belly, made a nuke baby with a woman of mine in her second head. Well, looky here now, a nuke baby fell out of my woman's magic nuke butt. And a second nuke baby dropped out of mine, and those nuke babies had another baby, and the butt baby is a Jersey Devil, and that's how the song's gonna end." No, they did not take off to the Pine Barrens to have butt babies and give birth to the Jersey Devil. But, they did sadly begin to suffer and die. By the early 1920s, women working at these factories began to connect their swollen jaws and fragile bones, their bones are literally disintegrating, to their deaths and to working in these factories. By 1927, litigation was beginning to be brought against the United States Radium Corporation, other similar companies. However, they'd continue to pump out their products for decades, because no true scientific understanding of the harmful effects of radioactive exposure was yet known. Some early deaths, companies like making radium cosmetics and toothpaste promising to rejuvenate the teeth and skin. Oh my gosh. Even radioactive condoms are being produced. Wow, just a whole new way to experience a burn-in sensation on your genitals, right? Like they had no idea how toxic this stuff was yet. Just putting their weens in some radioactive condoms and then putting those radioactive weens in vaginas. Like, how ironic that the early practitioners of safe sex were adding a preposterously unnecessary danger to their bedroom activities. Radiation was also added to cigarettes. Yeah, most cancer-inducing cigarettes ever. Radioactive cigarettes, that was a real thing. You could even get radium-infused sand for your kids' sandpits. Not kidding. It was advertised as more hygienic and beneficial than world-renowned curative baths. Yeah, just get in the nuke sand, kids. Hey, kids, you look a little pale. Why don't you get in the nuke box? Go on there. Get in the nuke box. The general public, no idea this was horrible for you. 1926, Hermann Joseph Mueller, an American geneticist, did finally figure out that this shit was really bad for you. He discovered a clear quantitative connection between radiation and lethal mutations. By 1928, some other scientists had made the same connection, but then the Great Depression hit and everyone had other stuff to worry about, right? So shut the fuck up about your radiation mutations, Dr. Crazy Talk. We're trying to figure out how to not starve to death right now and get our economy going. And then on the heels of the Great Depression, World War II hit, and it still wasn't a good time to hear about radiation was bad for you, right? There was a war to be fought, a war to be won by any means necessary, and radiation was becoming crucial to that war effort. So don't talk shit about it. It wouldn't be until 1946 that Mueller would be awarded the Nobel Prize in Physiology or Medicine for the discovery that mutations can be induced by X-rays. Now, that was conveniently given to him after the war and after a couple real nasty bombs were dropped on Japan, right? Seems like very suspicious timing to me. Oh, radiation is bad? Seriously? Oh, man. Oh, if we only knew about that before we bombed the fuck out of Japan. Oh, we're so sorry. Whoops. Whoopsies. 1932, British physicist James Chadwick discovered that the neutron was a thing. Big discovery concerning the ability to create both nuclear power and nuclear weapons. An important piece of the atomic puzzle was unlocked. The atom has a nucleus, a central region of protons and neutrons circled by electrons. This discovery was verified by the scientific community in 1934, and he won the Nobel Prize in 1935. Scientists soon realized that the newly discovered neutron was an uncharged but fairly massive particle, could be used to probe other nuclei. It didn't take long for scientists to find that hitting uranium with neutrons resulted in the fission of the uranium nucleus and the release of incredible amounts of energy, making possible nuclear weapons. Chadwick would work on the Manhattan Project, another future suck during World War II, to build atomic bombs. Also in 1932, well-known industrialist playboy, three-bottle-a-day Radithor drinker Eben Byers, Radithor being radioactive water, sold as a cure-all, died a horrific death of a then-unknown illness. Turns out he had a real bad case of radiation sickness. Byers had drank nearly 1,400 bottles of radioactive water over 3 years. Holy shit. He was probably smoking radioactive cigarettes and probably playing in his kid's radioactive sand nuke box as well. And by the time he died, Byers' brain was abscessed and holes were forming in his skull. Upon his death, the Wall Street Journal ran the headline, "The radiatum water worked fine until his jaw came off." Ugh. What a terrible way to go out. But still, radioactive products continue to be sold. 1938, the process of nuclear fission is discovered by German physicists Lisa Mettner and Otto Feisch. They determined that when an atom nucleus splits and creates new nuclei, a process called nuclear fission, it releases vast amounts of energy. They theorized that a fission chain reaction was possible. They also theorized that this chain reaction could be harnessed to create a limitless supply of clean energy for ships, planes, factories, homes, etc. In 1942, the world's first nuclear reactor is built in Chicago, Illinois. It's called Chicago Pile 1, an apt title considering how low-tech this thing was. Here's a quote. It was a stack of 40,000 graphite blocks held together in a wooden frame, 25 feet wide and 20 feet tall. Inside, about half the blocks were holes containing small amounts of uranium oxide. Inside, a few others were nuggets of refined uranium metal, the production of which was still a novel process. The pile had few safety features. The scientists' only protection against radiation came from a set of cadmium control rods designed to be inserted and removed by hand, along with untested theories and calculations. As one governmental report later put it, there were no guidelines to follow, no previous knowledge to incorporate. Right? They were pioneers. Neither university nor city officials were told that an experiment that even its creators judged as risky was taking place in the heart of the second largest city in the United States. Love it. Man, just a bunch of scientists dicking around with a radioactive brick pile, trying to cause some atomic reactions. That could have been one of the biggest scientific backfires in U.S. history. Just contaminate all of Chicago with lethal radiation. Oh, sorry, guys. Whoops. You're all going to have to move. You're all going to have to find a different place to live. The whole city has to go. The experiment itself was anticlimactic. The piles, you know, started up on December 2nd, brought to criticality, the point at which a nuclear reaction becomes self-sustaining, then shut down a half hour later before its growing heat and radioactivity became too dangerous and could possibly cause a massive explosion. The metallurgical laboratory experimented with it for a few months before disassembling and reconstituting it, now with radioactive shielding at a site somewhat more removed from the city where it became known as Chicago Pile 2. Ultimately, the reactor ran for over a decade there before it was finally dismantled and buried in the woods. The following month, planning began to build a proper series of nuclear reactors at Hanford, Washington, right, to breed plutonium for a bomb. And in January of 1945, plutonium reprocessing begins at Hanford. January 20th, uranium is separated for the first time in Oak Ridge, Tennessee. On July 16th, the U.S. explodes the world's first atomic bomb, the Trinity Test, at Alamogordo, New Mexico. On August 6th, Little Boy, a uranium bomb, is dropped on Hiroshima, Japan. Between 80,000 and 140,000 people are killed. On August 9th, Fat Man, a plutonium bomb, is dropped on Nagasaki, Japan, and about 74,000 people are killed. Fuck. So many civilians, man. We have to suck on those bombings someday, for sure. I get the rationale to stop the war. I've heard about it many times. You know, less overall loss of life than if the war would have continued. But civilians? Like, how were Truman and others not charged with war crimes? Seriously. Strongly guessing they weren't charged because we won the war. Had we lost? Oh, for sure. For sure they're war criminals. The Japanese were already talking surrender, by the way, when those bombs were dropped. The Hiroshima bombing also caused wide-scale radiation poisoning, and the actress Midori Naka, present during the bombing, was studied extensively for radiation poisoning. Her death in 1945 was the first to be officially documented as having been caused by radiation poisoning or radiation sickness. At the time, this radiation poisoning was referred to as atomic bomb disease. Her hair fell out days after the bombing. Purple patches develop on her skin. Her death receives widespread publicity, and the dangers of radiation first become known to the general population of the world. August 1st, 1946, President Harry S. Truman signs the Atomic Energy Act. Its purpose is to control the development and production of nuclear weapons and to direct the research and development of peaceful uses of nuclear energy. December 25th, the Soviet Union achieves its first nuclear chain reaction in Moscow. Also in 1946, two scientists from the USA die after working with fissile materials without using protective clothing or shielding. And before we continue with our nuclear timeline, let's have hear a quick word from today's sponsor. Time Suck is brought to you once again by Chikatilo's Wrestling Academy. At Chikatilo's Wrestling Academy, students of all ages, but mostly teens, are instructed in all manner of Chikatilo pelvic-based wrestling techniques. Limp pelvic thrusts, groin shame shimmies, clenched buttock wiggles, communist cock slaps, all patented Chikatilo wrestling moves for both self-defense and sexual pleasure. So use the promo code TIMESUCK at checkout and get 30% off an 8-week lesson package. And if you're still on the fence, listen to the man himself.
Hello, I'm Andrei Chikatilo. I'm excited for you to take a wrestling lesson. I overcome many things in Ukraine, including a Chernobyl disaster. And I give you nuclear-level knowledge of fighting. In my class, you learn nipple bites. You learn to take clothes off and cover self in blood. Add terror to defense. You learn penis-fast face slap to gain a psychological edge on attacker. I also offer one-on-one coaching. I prefer it. Meet me in woods for one-on-one wrestling and for lesson also. What is big deal? You learn in woods. I hope to see you soon.
Purchase in the next 10 days and you'll also get a free, what is big deal, Chikatilo water bottle complete with a straw incapable of ever standing up straight that you have to vigorously tug on to get your drink on. No, that is not today's sponsor. That's Lucifina tricking me into saying the most vile things imaginable. Be gone, Lucifina. Enough of your dark jokes. No. Today's Time Suck is brought to you by Lisa. Driven by a mission to provide a better place to sleep for everybody, Lisa is an innovative, direct-to-consumer online mattress brand that is also, unlike Chikatilo's Wrestling Academy, totally socially conscious. Forget Chikatilo, remember Lisa. For every 10 mattresses Lisa sells, they donate one to a shelter through their 110 program. They plant one tree for every mattress sold, donate 1% of each employee's time to volunteer for local causes. Most importantly, they make kick-ass mattresses. Numerous Time Suckers are already sleeping on, myself included. They have a patented universal adaptive feel Featuring three premium foam layers, including a 2-inch Avena foam top layer for cooling and breathability, a 2-inch memory foam middle layer for body contouring and pressure relief, and a 6-inch dense core support foam for durability and structure, which works for sleepers of all sizes. So try Lisa Mattress in your own home for 100 nights risk-free, available in the U.S., U.K., Canada, and Germany online. With free shipping, this 100% American-made mattress ships compressed in a box right to your door. Or try it at the Lisa Dream Gallery in Soho, New York City, and Virginia Beach, and over 80 West Elm stores nationwide. Get $125 off and a free pillow when you go to Lisa, LEESA.com/timesuck. Okay, back to some nuke shit. August 29, 1949, Soviet Union detonates its first atomic bomb, Joe 1, in Kazakhstan. It is a copy of the Fat Man bomb from the U.S. dropped in Japan, has a yield of 21 kilotons. And then out in the desert, 18 miles southeast of Arco, Idaho, on December 20th, 1951, the small experimental Breeder Reactor 1 becomes the world's first electricity-producing reactor when it generates sufficient electricity to power four 200-watt light bulbs. Yeah! Idaho! First state to power anything with nuclear electricity, motherfuckers, so suck on that. You suck on that. However, the small reactor was just built to prove theoretical concepts and was never intended to be used for commercial use, and it was quickly shut down and dismantled. Wah, wah, wah. All right, well, Idaho had a brief moment of glory. I'm still excited about it. June 26, 1954, at Obinsk, Russia, the nuclear power plant APS-1, with a net electrical output of 5 megawatts, was connected to the power grid, the world's first nuclear power plant that generated electricity for commercial use. Now, there are currently approximately 447 nuclear reactors in use in over 30 different nations, with over 60 more currently under construction. September 30th, 1954, the USS Nautilus, the first American nuclear-powered submarine, is launched. They had shrunken the tech down enough to get a small nuclear reactor inside a submarine, which is great for a sub's ability to remain underwater and go and be out at sea for long periods of time with no need for refueling. Also terrible for people in a sub if a meltdown occurs, which we will mention in a second. On December 30th, 1958, an accident occurs in the Los Alamos plutonium processing facility that would cement the dangers of radiation. Cecil Kelly, an experienced chemical operator, was working with a large mixing tank. The solution in the tank was supposed to be lean, typically less than 0.1 grams of plutonium per liter. However, the concentration on that day was actually 200 times higher. When Kelly switched on the stir, the liquid in the tank formed a vortex, and the plutonium containing layer went critical, releasing a huge burst of neutrons and gamma radiation in a pulse that lasted a mere 200 microseconds. Kelly, who had been standing on a foot ladder, peering into the tank through a viewing window, fell or was knocked to the floor by this quick flash. Two other operators on duty saw a bright flash, heard a dull thud. Quickly, they rushed to help and found Kelly incoherent and saying only, "I'm burning up, I'm burning up." He was rushed to the hospital, semi-conscious, retching, vomiting, hyperventilating, I'm guessing spontaneously bleeding. And at the hospital, Kelly's bodily excretions were sufficiently radioactive enough to give a positive reading on a radiation detector. And sadly, he does not turn into Dr. Manhattan. 2 hours after the accident, his condition seems to improve. He regains coherence. And then, however, it becomes clear very soon that he would not survive long. Tests show that his bone marrow is destroyed. And the pain in his abdomen becomes difficult to control despite medication. And he dies 35 hours after the accident. Man. July 4th, 1961, the Russian nuclear sub K-19 develops a major leak in her reactor coolant system, causing the reactor temperature to rise to a very dangerous 800 degrees Celsius. Due to poor design and failure to have a backup cooling system installed, Captain Zateyev had no choice but to order a team of 7 engineering officers and crew to undertake a repair despite lethal rates of radiation exposure. The repair crew was successful in stopping the leak. However, all 7 were dead within a week. The incident contaminated the entire boat. Within a few years, 20 more crew members were dead, their deaths attributed to the incident at sea. Man, how bad is fucking following that order suck? Hey, man, get in there. Go grab that radioactive fucking stuff and stuff it back in the reactor. Get in there. Go seal it off. But I don't have the proper clothes. Get in there. You'll be fine. Just take a shower afterwards. Also on October 31st, 1961, the USSR explodes the world's largest nuclear bomb with a yield of 58 megatons. They weren't about to let a little atomic poisoning stop some new weapons testing. 1970, Pripyat is founded on February 4th. as the ninth nuclear city of the Soviet Union. It's a closed city. You had to be authorized to live in or visit. See, they would have these closed cities where it's not like you could just go, you know, on a country drive and drive through Pripyat. You had to have authorization to be there. August 15th, 1972, construction begins on the Chernobyl power plant near Pripyat. The first Chernobyl reactor is completed in 1977, followed by a second reactor in 1978, third in 81, and a fourth in 83. And each reactor could produce 1,000 megawatts of electricity, and the plant produced 10% of all of the Ukraine's electrical needs. September 9th, 1982, a partial core meltdown occurs in reactor number one. The extent of the accident was not made public until 1985. The reactor was repaired, put back into operation within months. No one, that we know of was harmed in that incident. And for the most part, everything goes really well at Chernobyl until April 25th, 1986. Now, a few days earlier, April 20th, 21st, 22nd, right around there, reactor number four had been scheduled for maintenance and to test, the ability of the reactor's turbine generator to generate sufficient amounts of electricity to power the reactor safety systems in case of like an emergency blackout. Like if all the power went down for any reason, could this turbine generator keep the safety systems on? Well, on April 25th, all the required conditions had been met in order to run the test, and the reactor electricity output was gradually reduced to 50% of reactor capabilities. And then suddenly, and totally unexpectedly, the regional power station that supplied the area with electricity went offline. The Kiev power grid controller ordered postponement of further reduction of output because electricity was needed to satisfy the evening peak demand. The test was postponed, put in the hands of the night shift at the plant, and the night shift operators had very little experience in nuclear power plants because the majority of them had been brought over for some coal power plants. That sounds bad. Like I have no experience working in nuclear power or or any other kind of power job, but I feel like any type of systems test should be completed by a team with a lot of experience making sure, you know, that the plant doesn't melt down. Just, you know, it just feels like, hey, Sergey, we can't complete the plant safety test right now. Should we not wait until tomorrow? No. Put Homer Simpson and B-Team on it immediately. What could go wrong? Well, at 11 p.m., the grid controller in Kiev gave permission to continue the procedure, and so the power output of reactor number four needed to be reduced to 0.7 down to between 0.7 and 1 gigawatts in order to conduct the test at the prescribed lower power level. But the real problem was that the new crew wasn't aware of the prior postponement. They weren't prepared, aware that the power had already been reduced. I don't know. They didn't somehow check the right fucking meters, I guess. They didn't realize that the power wasn't running at normal levels. And they followed the original test protocol, which results in a power level decrease to unacceptable levels, right? So because of this, the late shift reduced the power to about a third of the minimum necessary required power to complete the experiment. And out of the ignorance, the crew continued with the experiment. Now, reading this, it does feel like these guys worked at the Springfield nuclear power plant from The Simpsons. And at about 1:05 a.m. in the early morning of April 26, water pumps that should have been driven by the turbine were turned on, and this increased the water flow beyond what is specified in safety protocol measures. At 1:23:04, the fatal experiment begins. The unstable state of the reactor wasn't shown on the control panel, so the crew wasn't aware of the danger that was threatening them. The turbine was disconnected from the reactor. The water pumps were cut off. The energy supply, which resulted in the increased level of steam in the center of the reactor and the temperatures as well. So pockets of steam now form in the voids in the coolant lines. 26 seconds later, 1:23:40, operators press the AZ-5 button that orders the shutdown of reactor in case of emergency, fully inserting all control rods, including the manual control rods that have been pulled out earlier. When all else fails, grab some rods and shove them in some holes. But the slow speed of the control rod insertion mechanism and some flawed rod design did the opposite by increasing the reaction rate. 7 seconds later, reactor power jumps to almost 30 gigawatts, which is 10 times more than usual. This causes the fuel rods to melt. A rapid increase of steam pressure builds up, and then a large steam explosion destroys the reactor lid, ruptures the coolant tubes, blows off part of the roof, and I'm guessing caused at least one technician to shit himself. The steam blast kills two technicians. Part of the roof blows off. A graphite fire breaks out. It's the result of a reaction between the inrush of oxygen from the air with the extremely high temperature of the reactor and the graphite moderator that was placed on the control rod ends. The graphite fire was the main cause of radioactive cloud spread to further areas. Took days to extinguish. And now, if the past few minutes of exposition came across as a lot of fucking scientific mumbo jumbo to you, you're not alone. I edited and rewrote that part probably six times. and not having a degree in nuclear science, it doesn't matter how many times you do. There's a part of me that's like, what the fuck are you talking about? So let me simplify. Essentially what happened was some science people who weren't qualified to run a very important test did so anyway, right? It was like, yeah, just go ahead. And they did it at the wrong time, right? To go forward with the test was a muy mal idea. Very bad. They went forward anyway. Some nuke shit got way too hot. It got too hot to then cool down. Bunch of red lights probably started flashing. Sirens are going off. Bunch of Russians in hazmat suits running around like Benny Hill. Just it's fucking pandemonium. And then blammo, big explosion. Just, oh shit, you know, followed by a big fire and just so much more panic. And during the panic, a lot of radiation going out into the atmosphere. A lot of people being like, we're going to get in so much fucking trouble for this. The Soviets wait a full day before evacuating the people of Pripyat because they're assholes. They don't evacuate until April 27th. In total, about 350,000 people would be evacuated from contaminated areas near the reactor in the days following the meltdown. Despite the health risks, the Soviet Union initially had no intention of relaying to the rest of the world what had happened in Chernobyl. But on April 28th, Swedish monitoring stations reported abnormally high levels of wind-transported radioactivity, pressed the Soviets for an explanation. They admit that there had been an accident in Chernobyl, and the world, especially the world of Eastern Europe, freaked the fuck out. It became the number one breaking story pretty much everywhere. In the weeks that followed the meltdown, 134 firemen and employees are hospitalized with ARS, acute radiation syndrome. 28 of those people die. At least 14 more die from radiation-induced cancer before 1996. And the endless speculation of the real damage done by Chernobyl is in full swing. Accounts vary widely over how many people were affected and or have died due to the meltdown. According to UN agencies' estimations, a further number of 4,000 to 9,000 people died from the consequences of this disaster, whose overall radiation level was estimated to be around the level of 400 atomic bombs like the one thrown on Hiroshima. The ecosystem near the reactor was so badly hit that the trees within 4 square miles of the nearby forest changed their color to some color between the brown and purple, and would later be called by the BBC the Red Forest. God knows how many animals died or lost the ability to reproduce. And now that we've made it through the blast, let's hop out of this timeline to discuss the repercussions in more detail of this tragic event.
Good job, soldier. You made it back. Barely.
When it comes to the effects of Chernobyl, let me just start by restating that experts can't and will never agree on the true extent of the damage caused. And we'll never be able to actually find out conclusively. A few years after the meltdown, John Giddes of the Royal Academy of Engineering told the UK government there could eventually be around 10,000 fatalities worldwide from this disaster. A study announced back in 2005 by the World Health Organization said a total up to 4,000 people could eventually die of radiation exposure from Chernobyl. Now, this is a study conducted by an international team of more than 100 scientists. But as of mid-2005, fewer than 50 deaths had been directly attributed to radiation from the disaster, almost all being highly exposed rescue workers, many who died within months of the accident, but others who died as late as 2004. Environmentalist group Greenpeace back in 2006 attributed nearly 100,000 deaths and a quarter of a million cancer cases to Chernobyl. And that report wasn't written by 10 hippies sitting in a drum circle, you know, working on aligning their spirit rhythms on some mountaintop. No, it was conducted by a team of 52 scientists hired by Greenpeace, and the study was based primarily on Belarus's national cancer statistics. The report concluded, amongst other findings, that on the basis of demographic data, between 1991 and 2006, 60,000 people have additionally died in Russia because of the Chernobyl accident, and estimates of the total death toll for Ukraine and Belarus could eventually reach another 140,000. Right? So, they're thinking up to 200,000 deaths could be attributed eventually. Finland was one of the most heavily affected countries, affected by the radioactive fallout. And another group of scientists and medical researchers analyzed the relation of the estimated external radiation exposure from the fallout to cancer incidents in Finland between 1988 and 2007. The study comprised all 3.8 million Finns who had lived in the same dwelling for 12 months following the accident. Their analysis, found that there was not a noticeable increase in cancer incidents following the Chernobyl accident, with the possible exception of colon cancer amongst women rising slightly. Now, this is important to note, man. This study didn't get a lot of media attention, really any. I had to find it in some old medical journal from the U.S. National Library of Medicine and the National Institute of Health, but it reports the increase of cancer compared to pre-Chernobyl levels. A lot of other studies just list the total amount of cancer cases since Chernobyl hit, which is completely meaningless fucking statistics. That's completely meaningless data. You got to know the baseline, like how much cancer was already occurring previous to Chernobyl, and then how much cancer occurred afterwards. And if it's a negligible difference, then you can't really blame the meltdown on the new cancer cases. You know, and it's tricky because, you know, cancer affects, you know, slash kills so many people already. One study I came across said that roughly 20% of just all people in general on Earth will die from cancer. So when you're looking at a population of roughly 5 million people in the most heavily hit area around Chernobyl, you have to already attribute, you know, 1 million deaths to cancer of some sort, you know, as opposed to dying of natural causes or anything else, you know. That sounds like so much. But I found another stat that said 38.5% of people will be diagnosed with some form of cancer at some point in their life. So when you're trying to determine how much cancer Chernobyl caused, you have to look at statistic, you know, like a significant statistical increase. You have to find that above an already gigantic number. And even then, you have to then rule out other variables. You know, do people living in the fallout areas smoke more than they used to? Do they have a higher percentage of jobs that put them in contact with other carcinogens than they used to? Do they live in more urban areas with more air pollution than people used to? Do they drink more radiation water? Do they wear more radiation condoms? Do they sit in more radioactive sandboxes than they used to? But seriously, it's super complex. And what was the total area that may have been affected anyway? During the 10-day period of maximum release from Chernobyl, volatile radionuclides were continuously discharged and dispersed among many parts of Europe and later the entire northern hemisphere. For example, relatively high fallout concentrations were measured at Hiroshima and Japan over 8,000 kilometers from Chernobyl. Most radiation was deposited in areas near the reactor, although some hot particles were transported thousands of kilometers away. The largest concentrations of volatile nuclides and fuel particles occurred in Belarus, Russia, and Ukraine, which makes sense because that's right where it happened. But more than half of the total quantity of Chernobyl's volatile inventory was deposited outside of those countries. So a lot of it made it, you know, many, 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 many miles, many kilometers away. Extensive surveying of Chernobyl's cesium-37 contamination was carried out in the 1990s under the auspices of the European Commission. The results indicated that about 3,900,000 square kilometers of Europe was contaminated to various degrees by cesium-137, which is 40% of the surface area of Europe. So in terms of surface area, Belarus and Austria were most affected by higher levels of contamination. However, other countries were seriously affected. More than 5% of Ukraine, Finland, and Sweden were contaminated so statistically – or too – statistically dangerous levels. More than 80% of Moldova, the European part of Turkey, Slovenia, Switzerland, Austria, Slovak Republic were contaminated as well. 44% of Germany, 34% of the UK were similarly affected. In terms of total deposition, or, you know, total, you know, depositing of cesium-137, Russia, Belarus, and Ukraine received the highest amounts of fallout, while former Yugoslavia, Finland, Sweden, Bulgaria, Norway, Romania, Germany, Austria, Poland each received more than one petabecquerel of cesium-137, a very large amount of radioactivity. So again, a lot of the world affected to some degree by radiation, which may have created a lot of extra cancer or almost no extra cancer outside the immediate fallout zone. Right? Again, so hard to determine, you know, who truly was affected by this. But let's talk about that zone. Let's talk about this zone right around it. There's still an area of roughly 1,000 square miles around Chernobyl, which is uninhabitable. It's called the exclusion zone or the zone of alienation. And while you can't move there, you can visit. I had no idea that was a thing. I swear to God, you could take a tourist trip to Chernobyl right now if you get your permits in order. Or you can, you know, visit all around the area of Chernobyl. And this area even has a hotel. The hotel is the only place for explorers of the zone to stay in, and its staff are only allowed to work on a strict rotation of 15 days in the zone and then 15 days outside to keep radiation levels to a minimum. Workers inside the zone live in basic dormitories in the town of Chernobyl. What the fuck? How hard up for a job are you when you apply to work at a hotel inside the exclusion zone of Chernobyl? Jesus. Like, if you hate your job, be thankful you don't have that one. If you don't have a job, be thankful you don't have that one. Holy shit. Another roughly 5,000 people still work inside the exclusion zone, mostly sentry guards, also workers on this massive new sarcophagus built to kind of like protect, kind of encase the old reactor so it doesn't spread any more radiation in the future. There's firemen protecting the still volatile area from deadly forest fires. Man, service staff for the workers, like the hotel staff, other workers, you know, work on that rotation pattern, 15 days in, 15 days out. Keeps the radiation levels manageable. Every visitor coming out of the exclusion zone goes through a radiation screening at each checkpoint. If your levels are too high, clothes and boots are either washed or left behind. Taking anything out of Chernobyl is forbidden. Tour guides are checked regularly and say they don't receive anywhere near the annual levels of radiation deemed too dangerous. One tourist, YouTuber BioNerd23, she has a bunch of videos online, has visited the exclusion zone many times and has posted videos of herself. I've watched a bunch of them doing things like eating apples from apple trees, just, you know, very close to the reactor. And so far, she appears to be very healthy. And Pripyat wasn't the only town inside the zone, by the way. I mentioned Chernobyl itself. There's the town of Chernobyl. This is the town that has the hotel. And a small number of people were allowed to move back to this town after the meltdown. There's about 180, mostly older residents, living full-time in the zone. They were able to return to their ancestral village despite warnings from the Ukrainian government, which has now largely allowed them just to return to their homes to die in peace. You can watch a documentary about these people if you want called The Babushka of Chernobyl. And Chernobyl is less than 15 miles from the former power plant, man. Tying this a bit to last week, in the latter half of the 18th century, it had a large Hasidic Jewish population. In 1898, 70% of the 10,000 people living in Chernobyl were Jewish. Then World War II hit and the Nazis killed all of them. So the reactor meltdown, not even the worst thing to happen to this town in a 50-year period. And scientists say the zone will continue to be contaminated by the radiation from the disaster for about 300 years more. For the next 300 years, it's still going to be unfit for human life. But yeah, these people are living there, and you know what? They don't look like fucking toxic Avengers. I saw a little trailer for that documentary, and they seem to look normal. You know, they look like old Russian people, old Ukrainian people. Yeah, and ironically, also you can find videos of inside the contamination zone, and it is full of life. Strangely, the exclusion zone has basically become a wildlife refuge. At first, wildlife populations in the immediate area of the meltdown plummeted in one area of forest covering between 4 and 5 square kilometers. Many coniferous trees died, right? Like we talked about earlier, the red forest, the dying needles turning rusty red. In that first year, the most contaminated areas, many soil invertebrates like worms and bugs and shit were killed. Small mammal population plummeted. However, in large areas of the exclusion zone, radiation levels dropped dramatically within months, and wildlife began to bounce back, taking advantage of the absence of people. In the mid-1990s, a team of U.S. and Ukrainian ecologists set up traps to explore how small mammals were responding, and they caught a range of voles, mice, and shrews. They found that the abundance of animals and the diversity of species was more or less identical both inside and outside the exclusion zone. So in other words, within 10 years of this disaster, the small mammal population is apparently showing no ill effects from radiation. Between 2008 and 2010, they surveyed hundreds of kilometers of animal trackways to assess population densities of elk, wolf, wild boar, deer, foxes. They found that track densities were similar to those recorded at 4 radiation-free nature reserves in Belarus. If anything, wolves specifically are faring better at Chernobyl than other reserves. The data suggests that they might be 7 times as abundant there as in other local kind of forests. They set up motion-activated camera traps in the exclusion zone as part of an ongoing project to better understand the risk to humans and to wildlife associated with exposure to radioactivity. And they found evidence of beavers, badgers, lynx, bison, even a brown bear made an appearance. Other studies have not been quite so positive. Another study published in 2009 suggests that insects and spiders are less abundant in areas of the exclusion zone where radiation levels are high. To me, sounds like the fucking perfect place to camp. Sounds like I need to take a little camping trip to a little nuke zone, right? Are you kidding me? Less bugs, more wildlife. Sounds like a good place to hunt, right? Maybe your deer gets an extra head on it. That's a little more meat. Get a little more neck meat on your nuke deer. Let's pour a little nuke sauce around Yellowstone. Let's pour a little nuke sauce up in Glacier. I'm sick of the fucking bugs ruining my camping trips. I want to see some critters, but I don't want to get eaten alive by other smaller, annoying critters that maybe we could just kind of nuke out of existence. There are even an abundance of catfish living in the cooling ponds of the Chernobyl reactors. That BioNerd23 posted a video of these online, and I couldn't find one with even 2 heads. I looked at some 2016 National Geographic photos of Chernobyl, and again, no multi-headed mutants, no 3-eyed foxes, nothing. Just a bunch of normal-looking, very healthy animals. In fact, when you do a Google image search for Chernobyl mutant animals, pics of two-headed creatures and deformed children do come up. But the source for most of them is a website called ChernobylGuide.com, and it looks to me to be 100% wackadoodle. Looks to be total clickbait. The pics don't have sources. Most of the kids in the pics don't even look Russian. It looks to be a lot of horseshit. But I assume that a lot of people see these pics in an image search, you know, and they're just like, oh, God, the fucking – those poor new kids with their two heads. That's the world we live in now, right? You just people. A lot of people just look, oh, it's Jesus, and they do no digging past the credit on the image and just think it must be true. I also find this extremely interesting. Some Chernobyl experts have claimed that unsubstantiated fear of radiation poisoning has actually led to greater suffering than the actual disaster itself. For example, many doctors throughout Eastern Europe and the Soviet Union advised pregnant women to undergo abortions to avoid bearing children with birth defects or other disorders, though the actual level of radiation exposure these women experienced probably far too low to cause real problems, right? Plenty of these people had kids, didn't abort, and overwhelmingly, the majority of these kids are totally fine. So those are the facts. Radiation, bad for you in high amounts, lethal in really high amounts, spontaneous bleeding, very bad. Environmental impact of Chernobyl, more cancer been caused for sure, but very unclear as to how much. For non-human mammals, the benefit of the relocation of humans seems to have outweighed the harmful effects of radiation, and they're thriving. But who cares about facts? Who gives a shit about facts when you have the entertaining, strongly felt opinions of the idiots of the internet?
Idiots of the internet.
I found a video today called Chernobyl Mutations, posted by YouTuber Paul Estrada. And it's full of tons of disturbing images, pictures of kids missing limbs, kids dying of cancer, people with all sorts of various mutations. But again, how many of these victims can have their diseases conclusively linked to Chernobyl? I mean, not to sound like a dick, but I could go visit various group homes and oncology wards of any city in the United States, in the fucking world, and put together a similar group of pictures, right? It's just tragic. It's always tragic, but it doesn't necessarily link it to Chernobyl. And this stuff happens continuously across the world, mutations, you know, horrible deaths, whether or not a meltdown ever occurred. User James Spillane shares my sentiments, posting, "Crikey, do you not think to check if these photos are where some guys on YouTube says they're from? All of those mutations have been documented from photos showing people from all over the world with exposure to radiation. Of course it was a disaster, but try getting your facts right before sending inane, two-dimensional, heartfelt, sorry bullshit." I love that he actually wrote "crikey." Reminds me of the croc hunter, Steve Irwin. "Crikey, she's a beauty. Crikey, would you look at the teeth on that one? Crikey, I wonder if I should stop fucking about with dangerous animals before it's too late. Crikey, stingray, crikey." User Cam posts some silly social justice warrior bullshit, just some feel-good nonsense, saying, "Just shut down the nuclear power plants," and then all caps, "It's not that hard." So many exclamation points, frowny, concerned frowny face with a furrowed brow. Only acceptable to post if this dipshit is 12 years old or younger. Not that hard. Are you ready to live without electricity there, numbnuts? You do realize that we won't be able to access YouTube without it, right? You do realize that nuclear power plants do more than create just nuclear waste. Do you understand that? That's where the word power comes into play. And we kind of need it to make our world work. So there is that. User It's Just Blaze posts something that may or may not be just trolling, saying, so fuck it. "Just kill them to end ours and their misery." Wow, that post would have been dark already, but much less dark if you just didn't include ours. "Put these mutants out of their misery." I mean, that's a pretty fucked up call for you to make, but way more fucked up when you add "and mine." "Put them out of my misery, the misery I endure from having to see pictures of people I don't like knowing are alive. That's how I feel the misery." What a fucking sociopath. User Lori Smith apparently believes everything she sees and hears on the web, proving this by posting, "And Russia, a superpower, denies their existence while warehousing these children? Human rights doesn't exist in their vernacular." What the fuck are you talking about? Not even extremist watchdog Greenpeace thinks this is going on, right? They're not warehousing mutant children to hide the effects of Chernobyl from the world. Right? Why would anyone do that? If someone is so evil to warehouse mutant kids to hide from the world, why not just kill them? They would have to be a very unique combination of very evil and also very dumb to be like, you know, "No, we're going to take all these mutant kids. We're going to put them in a warehouse out somewhere. so no one will know the secret. Why not just kill him? Because that's horrible. I'm not a monster. I'm not going to kill some mutant kids. I'll put them in a fucking remote warehouse, hide them from the world, let them die there, but I'm not going to kill them. What are you talking about? Oh, man. I feel like this person, Lori, cries a lot about the shit she thinks is happening around the world. I've met too many people like that. People who live just to learn about, wallow in, and share tragedy, right? They define themselves with other people's tragedies. Right? It's like that type of person has gotten up and walked out of my stand-up comedy shows so many times over the years, right? They can't handle something I've said. That I have no interest in ever spending any time with that kind of person ever again. Oh my gosh, Susan, do you hear about those poor Chernobyl kids? Russia's hiding them in warehouses right now. I just can't stand knowing that that's going on. For Pete's sake, why would those fudge nuggets hide them? Because they're toxic mutants, Susan. Because Chernobyl gave them three eyes and no legs. God bless America. It makes me so freaking angry. Gee willikers, corn nut, son of a bucket. Lori, why is Russia doing this? Are they really doing? Yes, Susan. Leaping lizards are doing it right now in some warehouse near Chernobyl. Go lick a duck if you don't believe me. Lori, the area around Chernobyl has belonged to the Ukraine and Belarus, not Russian, since 1991, you dumb bitch. Why do you believe this stupid shit, you mindless fuck? Don't call me anymore. I wish you could play it like that. Plenty to be outraged about in the world when you don't need facts to back up your rage. It can be a scary world, for sure, but it can be a much more terrifying world when you're an idiot of the internet.
Idiots of the internet.
I feel like if the reviewer from earlier would have heard that last act out, she would have been very upset. She wouldn't have appreciated that little comedy moment there, or lack of comedy moment. But yeah, just you find those people all over the web. Like, they just bounce from like tragic video to tragic video. Just, oh no, oh my, how could that happen? Ugh. Okay, so that's what we learned. Chernobyl is very bad, but maybe not as bad as we've been led to believe. Nuclear power plants, dangerous, fact. Radiation sickness, horrific way to go out, fact. Nuclear meltdown could end in life as we know it. Not fact, not necessarily. The Earth is pretty resilient. Within a few years, the area immediately surrounding the reactor in Chernobyl has become a fucking nature preserve. Did not expect that. Now, that being said, mutations did occur. Sterility did occur in those animals. You know, this is not to be filed under the no big deal category. People did die. People are still dying from cancer that in all likelihood could be attributed to Chernobyl, but just maybe not as many as I expected to find out about. What I started wondering going through all of this is nuclear power more dangerous than other alternative energy sources? And here's what I found in an article published in the journal IE, an Irish digital news site. Speaking of Ireland, get those accents in now if you're going to play this week's little space lizard game on The Secret Suck. The 2014 article claims that over 40% of the world's energy consumption comes from coal, and that some 30,000 coal miners have died since 1970, more than in the production of any other energy source. So there's that. Environmentally, the pollutants produced by coal mining and coal burning also have detrimental effects on health. It can cause or increase the risk of a myriad of health concerns such as heart attack, asthma, lung cancer, bronchitis, other respiratory conditions. The World Health Organization estimated in 2008 that pollution from coal particles causes 1 million deaths yearly, right? Because some countries with no regulations, they just puffed, it's just, you know, like in China, some places where there's so much fucking pollution from that. Fossil fuels currently produce almost 63% of the United States energy needs, producing roughly 2,500 billion kilowatt hours. Nuclear power gives us 20% of our overall all energy needs. Hydropower, dams give us 7.5% of our power. Wind farms give us 6.3%. Solar only gives us about 1.3% currently. To me, the real long-term danger with fossil fuels outside of environmental impact is limited availability. I mean, we're going to run out. Not going to happen with nuclear power, right? Well, not necessarily. We're actually estimated to run out of uranium to mine in about 200 years. However, we're set to run out of fossil fuels by most estimates within 150 years. So another slight edge to nuclear power over fossil fuel power in my eyes. When it comes to the dangers of nuclear power, the perceived threat may be greater than the actual threat. So far, the only large-scale nuclear power plant meltdowns have been Fukushima and Chernobyl. But what about hydropower, right? What about that? Well, most usable sites in developed nations, most, you know, rivers already have dams in place, and the Earth isn't making any more rivers. So while that process can get slightly more efficient over time, not feasible. for hydroelectric power to fuel the future's energy needs. So sorry, water, you're out. What about wind power? I Googled, can wind power be enough energy for the whole world? And my laptop punched me in the dick and told me to grow the fuck up. Currently, one giant windmill having wind farm could provide enough energy to power the entire planet if that wind farm was twice the size of the entire state of Alaska. And that farm would have to be in a very windy area. It couldn't just be anywhere. So, you know, wind doesn't look to be able to provide anything but extra power in addition to other, you know, sources going forward. It doesn't look like it can ever be a widespread kind of primary source of power. So, you know, get out of here, wind. You're out. So then I Googled, can solar energy power the whole world? And my laptop ripped my balls off, said, you clearly don't need these. Then it gave me a hacky sack, told me to go do that instead, think about pretty things, and then it shut itself down. However, fuck my redneck dickhead computer, because it turns out solar power does appear to be key to the energy needs of the future. An MIT study revealed that today's solar panel technology is all that is needed to supply the world with many terawatts of clean solar power by 2050. The MIT researchers suggest that crystalline silicon photovoltaic technology of today will remain viable and relevant in the future. While further research may improve solar panel efficiency, we do have all the tools we need right now, according to the study, to supply all of the world's energy needs. Right, there's a ton of room for technological improvement in increasing solar panels' efficiency when it comes to harvesting the sun's natural energy. Man, the sun! The Egyptians worshipped it thousands of years ago, and it may be the key to our future survival. Because let's be honest, who wants to live, you know, without electricity now? To me, I think we got to harvest Nimrod's eyes, man. Get his fucking sun eyes going. Harvest the power of Nimrod. Hail Nimrod! To me, the real danger with nuclear power isn't with energy. It's with weapons. Right, and I think pretty much everyone is in agreement with that. There's a website called nuclearsecrecy.com/nukemap where you can enter your city and find out how many people would die if a nuclear bomb hit it. You pick a city, pick from a variety of existing nuclear weapons, find out how many people die from the initial fireball, from the air blast, from thermal radiation. You can decide if the bomb hits, you know, like makes impact with the earth or explodes over the earth at various, you know, altitudes. So for example, if a 100 megaton Tsar Bomba bomb, this Russian nuclear weapon hit San Francisco and landed, like, you know, made impact on the earth, it would kill an estimated 1,559,110 people, with an additional 1,235,060 injuries. Now, if that same bomb hit Tokyo in the same way, almost 12 million dead, with almost another 10 million injuries. One of these bombs hits my home of Coeur d'Alene. I put that in there too. Fucking all of us are dead. Like, this entire area is just gone. It's insane. So coal, hydroelectric, wind, solar, none of those energy means carry the same potential side effect as far as the weaponry. You know, no one's going to be using solar power technology to create a solar bomb that's going to wipe out 12 million people in Tokyo. Okay. All right. Enough energy talk today. My brain hurts from all these big words. Let's take a peek back at Chernobyl with today's top five takeaways.
Time suck. Top five takeaways.
Number one, radiation comes in many forms. And science, radiation falls on a spectrum of electromagnetic radiation. Long wavelengths are things like radio waves. Light is somewhere in the middle. Small lengths like alpha, beta, and gamma rays are emitted from radioactive isotopes. They can penetrate your cells and destroy your DNA. Of course, these rays exist all around us all the time. We're all experiencing some level of radiation. It's the amount that is the issue. Number two. A radium company in New Jersey offered $1,000 to anyone who could prove that its certified radioactive water, sold under the brand name Radithor, did not contain the large amount of radium and thorium it claimed to in the 1920s and 1930s. Alas, Radithor was a real thing. No one ever claimed the prize. Radithor did claim at least one life, that of well-known industrialist, Playboy, three-bottle-a-day Radithor user Evan Byers. And again, his gruesome death in 1932 inspired the Wall Street Journal headline, "The radium water worked fine until his jaw came off." Ooh, number three, the forest around Chernobyl is not teeming with three-headed deer or even eight-legged Norse spider horses. But it is teeming with wildlife, including more wolves than surrounding Eastern European forests and even brown bears, and healthy-looking catfish in the reactor cooling ponds. Number four, a few hundred people still live within a few miles of the meltdown, and I've watched some of their interviews, and they seem to be fine. I've actually seen more rugged-looking people right here in Idaho at the grocery store. Number five, new info. Despite setting a 19-mile exclusion zone and building a huge concrete sarcophagus to cover the melted down and still radioactive Unit 4 reactor, officials kept three reactors operating in the wake of the aftermath. Nearly 14 years altogether. At the time of the incident, a fifth and sixth reactor units were under construction. Those projects were quickly halted. But Units 1, 2, and 3 kept producing power. The last unit, Unit 3, operated until the year 2000, when international negotiations finally shut down the plant for good. Why? They needed the electricity. Man, how much would it suck to be told you still had to go back to work the day after the meltdown?
Hello, Alexei. I'm so glad you make it alive from explosion yesterday. Not feeling sick from radiation. I have good news. You will not lose good paying a nuclear plant job. It may take you many years to get. I also have bad news. I need you come in for double shift starting tonight. Yes, plant still burning, much radiation happening, trees turning red, many animals dying. So wear two jackets to be safe. And maybe bring lunch from home. Plant cafe food, how you say, a little sketchy at the moment.
Time suck. Top five takeaways.
Chernobyl sucked. Sucked so much nuke today. So much nuke, my jaw's gonna fall off like that poor early 20th century radiation drinker. Now get out there and grab some tickets to my Flat Earth tour. Hilarities in Cleveland, Ohio this weekend, all over the South in early April, Salt Lake City and more. So many shows up at dancummins.tv. Check out those dates. Snatch up some tickets. Thanks to Harmony Velikamp, Jesse Dobner, Lindsey Cummins, Josh Krell, the entire TimeSuck team. Thanks to all the space lizards who voted in Chernobyl to be a subject or a suck on the app. And thanks for all the reviews and spreading the suck. Man, post on social media, reference it on Reddit. Keep spreading that sweet, sweet suck. Every review helps. It helps so much. Next Monday's episode, it's a big one, talking about guns. And don't get triggered, pun intended. I'm not going heavy on either side, man. There's enough of that out there. There's enough people saying, you fucking don't take them. There's enough people saying, fucking get them out of here. I'm not going to do either one of those things. All right? I'm not going to talk about how we have to get rid of them all. I'm not going to talk about how, like, we don't have to fucking change anything. I just want to present data and let you interpret it. Not claiming to have any answers, you know? I just want to give you as much unbiased info as I can because, you know, this is something in society we need to discuss like big boys and big girls. So fucking put your big boy pants on, pull up your big girl pants, and, you know, don't be a fucking baby about it. People get way too fucking sensitive about this issue. I hate it when people feel like there's something you just can't talk about. Then that's the thing we need to talk about the most. So much emotion around it. So much emotion just blocking logic. So let's just learn about it. I'm curious, you know, and full disclosure, I'm a gun owner. I am just curious about stats regarding this issue. I've heard people get real fired up about it my entire life. And I'm ready to unpucker my butthole. And I hope you are as well. And you can trust me, this is going to be a good suck. And let's find out what you suckers have been up to, you know, with this week's Time Sucker Updates.
Updates. Get your Time Sucker Updates.
So much info on Chernobyl sent in by Time Suckers this past week. I love it, man. Getting ready for this episode. So we'll start with some of that, including some of this to round out the Chernobyl presentation. First bit of extra nuclear knowledge comes in from Jesse Latham, super sucker. It's an excerpt from a longer email adding insight to the meltdown. And Jesse says, the operators begin the test. The reactor is meant to have 28 control rods fully inserted at all times. However, during the course of the test, it is discovered that only 18 of the required 28 have been inserted. Even after it is discovered, not enough control rods are inserted, and despite several alarming printouts from the computer calling for immediate shutdown, they continue on with the test, even shutting down two of the eight turbines meant to feed water back into the reactor. In fact, multiple backup safety features, including the emergency core cooling system, were shut down for the test. The RBMK reactor has a major design flaw called positive void coefficient. So as stated before, steam is produced by the boiling water heated by the fuel rod's reaction. To put it as simply as I can, the explosion was caused by an increase in reactivity due to a decrease in the amount of control rods. The rate of reaction caused excess heat. Excess heat caused the turbines that feed the coolant water in the core to fail. The failure of the turbine prevents coolant to enter the core, which then even further increases the temperature, which then increases the rate of activity exponentially. The positive void refers to the empty space in the coolant, the bubbles created when boiling water boils. And all these factors increase. So much steam is produced by the increasing hot boiling water. While this is happening, one of the operators present hits the emergency shutdown button. However, too late. Due to another one of the emergency systems shut down during the test, the emergency control rods failed to descend. And as the remaining fuel rods begin to descend simultaneously, the rods, which are tipped in a substance that does nothing to slow reaction rate, the fuel rods meant to descend a full 23 feet descend only 6.5 to 8 feet total before they stop. When the control rods stopped, shockwaves felt throughout the entire plant. Because the rods were not fully inserted, the majority of the major backup safety systems were shut down. The exponentially increasing rate of reaction slash heat in the core causes the initial explosion in the reactor due to excessive levels of hydrogen mixed with the helium nitrogen gas mixture already present in the reaction. This explosion causes the upper biological shield weighing 1,000 tons over the reactor to be blown up, falls back down, further jamming any last hope of controlling the reaction. When the shield dislodged and exposes part of the reactor core, almost immediately following the first explosion, there is a second explosion which throws bits and chunks of graphite moderator blocks and control rods throughout the reactor room and surrounding land outside the plant itself. It also releases about 50 tons of evaporated nuclear fuel into the atmosphere. This has been great. Honored to help provide some knowledge to you and all the suckers out there, Jess. Man, thanks for that extra info. Man, again, I just pictured that Benny Hill music. I picture just, you know, just Russian, nuclear engineers just running around, like tripping over each other, just fucking, you know, just screaming tears. Holy shit, man. 1,000-ton shield blown up into the air and 50 tons of evaporated nuclear fuel thrown out of the atmosphere. Wow, what a huge lapse in judgment, you know, those guys made. Whew. Now, another time sucker update about Chernobyl from Ailey. I believe I'm saying that right, A-I-L-E-Y. I don't know that name very well. Ailey regarding how the evaporated radioactive fuel affected lives far away. And Ailey says, hiya, this will be quick as I'm supposed to be working right now, not listening to Time Suck. Love it. Work can wait. I just finished the latest one and heard the topic for next week is Chernobyl. I wanted to send some quick personal info. Places outside of the initial zone had some interesting consequences. My parents were living in Scotland, and at that time, my parents are always talking about how that year, lots of dairy and meat products were contaminated and thrown away due to the meltdown. However, the bigger impact I'm personally aware of and connected to is my boyfriend. He's Finnish, I live in Finland now, and he was born soon after the meltdown. He was diagnosed with leukemia within the first few months of his life. According to him, apparently a lot of children in Finland were diagnosed with cancer after that. And as you know, Finland right next to Russia. After 2 years, he went into remission, hasn't shown any signs since, but still has to deal with some shit from that. And I think it's something worth mentioning. That meltdown affected the world. And that's a warning that even the most selfish in the world should keep in mind during talks about nuclear energy. Anyways, just wanted to mention it. Thanks for this podcast. I've been struggling at a job I hate. And your podcast on my ride home helps so much to keep my spirits up. Oh, yay. Well, I wish I could see you in my hometown of Salt Lake City, but maybe you'll make it to Helsinki someday. Ailey. I hope I do make it there. Thanks for rocking the suck so far from Idaho. I'm honored. Hope you get a better job soon. And yes, we do need to think about, nuclear energy. Again, I hope that it's just a temporary patch. I mean, clearly from what I read and uncovered, solar seems to be the way to go going forward. And now another personal note on Chernobyl. This from Super Sucker Jake. Says, hey, Dan, the Time Suck Man. Not sure where you're at with the Chernobyl suck, but I thought that you would find this interesting. My father-in-law's fiance was vacationing in Russia when Chernobyl happened. She doesn't talk about it often, but based on the few times that she's talked about it, she was on vacation with her first husband and at least four other couples. I don't know exactly how close she was, but they were close enough to be affected by the radiation. She's the only one still alive that was on that trip and has been battling cancer for the last 10 plus years. Everyone she was on vacation with died from cancer. She spent countless time and money trying to find a cure, and based on different DNA-related tests she's done, recently they determined her cancer is definitely tied to that terrible event. I wish I had more info for you, but it's a touchy subject for her, so it's not something she mentions often. I appreciate your podcast and comedy. Also grew up in a rural area, and your podcast has helped me open my eyes to the world around me. Thanks for what you do, Jake and Indy. Man, thank you, Jake and Indy. This touched on what I spoke about earlier, man. So hard to determine exactly who was affected by this event. Some studies say only 4,000 deaths. You know, not the only. It's a terrible amount. Others point to 100,000 or more. Who knows if the deaths you mentioned, were captured in any of these Chernobyl-related studies and statistics. Man, this really wants to make me invest in solar power for the future. Nuclear energy may be cleaner, in some ways than fossil fuel energy. But man, neither comes close to being as safe as harnessing sweet Nimrod's eye power. So now, a couple cool updates on last week's Belsky Brothers. The first very personal story, one of many I've heard that makes me really question how any reasonable person could deny the Holocaust. This is from Chaim Schaller. And Chaim says, wow, just listen to the Belsky Brother episode. I've written it before, but right off the bat, I can tell you this may be long-winded. There are a few thoughts I need to share. As mentioned in my last email, I'm a religious Jew. I grew up in Pittsburgh, where a number of Holocaust survivors lived, and they would occasionally come and talk at my school. I want to share two stories to further illustrate some of what you mentioned in the episode. The first man, Sam, was 12 and had gone to learn with one of his teachers. When he got home, had gone out to learn. His family was gone. He never saw his parents or siblings again. He escaped during one of those death marches you mentioned. As they were being herded through the woods, he and two friends broke out in a dead run. He eventually passed out from exhaustion and was found by Russian soldiers who saved him. When the war ended, he was 18 years old, almost 6 feet tall, and weighed less than 90 pounds. The second man, Jack, was liberated by the American Army. When they would liberate a concentration camp, the Army would bring in medical staff as well as food, blankets, and other provisions. It was generally a few days before trucks could then take them out of the camp, but many people did not leave on their own during this time. One night, an American soldier came across Jack and a few others attempting to dig a hole under the fence using spoons and their bare hands. The soldier asked Jack why they were doing this. The front gate was open. Jack responded that when you spend over 4 years being told daily that you will never walk out of this place alive, you treat that as gospel. It wasn't just our bodies that were imprisoned, it was also our minds. I've never understood why other minority groups dislike Jews so much. We came to this country looking for the same opportunities to make a better life for ourselves, to free ourselves from religious persecution as well as persecution based on skin color, sexual orientation, or political leanings. The Jewish holiday of Passover is coming up, where we commemorate our exodus from Egypt. We mentioned during the Passover ceremony, called a seder, how we have faced people in every generation attempting to wipe us out. I'm proud of my heritage. I'm proud of the way I was raised. For the most part, I think that racism and anti-Semitism come from a similar place, which is fear and misunderstanding. Yeah, couldn't agree more. Living in New York City and riding the subway, I've been threatened and called a fag Jew, but I've also had open, honest, and meaningful conversations with people that don't look like me or believe what I believe that I felt to be meaningful and real progress. I think what you do and what you bring to us each week is worth more than you or any of us can know at this stage, but bringing people together from all walks of life that are curious and want to learn and be better is such a powerful thing. Good on you. I'll repeat that I've been a fan for years, and it's a very cool feeling to respect and look up to you, especially with so much divisiveness and darkness in the world. We need more people in the public to be like you. This is a saying. There's a saying in the Talmud, which is one of our central texts, that when you save a life, it is as though you saved the entire world. Hail Nimrod, praise Bojangles, and you keep on sucking. Ah, that's beautiful, Chaim. Chaim Schaller, I think I'm saying that right. I'm trying to get a little better. Thank you for sharing that wonderful story, man. Powerful stuff, brother. What an amazing community we have. You're right. I'm proud to be part of it. Not easy for me, man. I get so judgy all the time. Well, it's the internet. You know, I get judgy on ignorance, but I feel like I should. But just in general, man, I get why, you know, it's so hard for us all to kind of get along together. You know, it's like, it takes a lot of fucking effort. It's so easy to be like, you know what? Fuck those guys. It's so easy to go there in your head. And yes, these stories, man, need to be continuously told forever so people don't forget. So easy to forget the sins of our past. And just keep repeating them. That's my main goal with all this. I just want to not be as dumb. I'm just trying to be less dumb as I get older. Now, interesting language update regarding my judgment of the bookkeeper of Auschwitz referring to a Jewish child as it from an anonymous sucker. And a lot of people actually wrote in with his same update. This is anonymous sucker saying, here come the spoons, mother sucker. I love your stand-up and the podcast. For the record, Nazis were and are vile filth, deserve to rot in the in the asshole of Bojangles for as many eternities as possible. That being said, in the interest of education and accuracy, I want to give you some insight into what that monster from the death camps, not going to use his name, could have used, like why he may have used the word it to describe a child. Besides the fact that he was a despicable piece of crap and deserves to suck the balls of Bojangles while Lucifina rams an oversized spiked mace up his ass for eternity, without lube, of course. In the German language, there are three articles assigned to every noun. Der, which is masculine, die, feminine, das, neutral. Interestingly, the articles used for the common words for children are as follows. Der for Junge, for a boy. The pronoun used, er, pronounced er, translates to he. Das for kind. The pronoun es translates to it. Das is for Mädchen. The pronoun translates to it as to it as well. Funny that it doesn't translate to he or she. So I appreciate how much research you put into the suck and want you to be accurate. So I thought I would send some info your way. Keep up the great work. Hope to catch one of your shows live someday, Anonymous. So thank you. Yeah, love that. Thank you very much. That's an interesting and important point regarding translation in general, man. Language B doesn't always have a perfectly corresponding word for a term from language A. Hence the phrase, lost in translation, man. Language is so fragile, so incomplete in so many ways. We're just, you know, we're all these fucking meat sacks. We're roaming around, you know, amongst our various tribes and our various corners of the globe, just trying to express our feelings as best we can and always failing to some degree, you know, always falling a little short. Now, a little silliness from last week. This really made me laugh. From sucker Zach Gentry. Zach says, I just want to say I used my 30% off at the Chikatilo wrestling class, and I'm going to have to give it a 2-star review. It's located across the street from David Icke's Subs and Sud Shop. They have an amazing sandwich that is made from lizard meat. And the wrestling classes, I walk in. I was met with the pleasant aroma of what I can only imagine is exactly what Soviet Russia smells like. Not knowing exactly what to study first, I decided to go through the armbar takedown class. We're partnered up, man on man, and we're taught that once on the ground, we're supposed to mash our cocks while breathing heavy, hovering over our partner. And I thought that was weird, but I'm new to wrestling, so what do I know? Anyway, after a week, all I've learned is how to dispose of bodies poorly and how to have a grown man mash his cock near my face. And so I asked for a refund, but was told they don't give refunds. Just thought you should know, not worth the $799.99 price after our 30% off. Probably would return if they did lower the price. Man, fuck. Sorry, buddy. Sorry, Zach. I apologize. Man, that's really frustrating to hear about Chikatilo's Wrestling Academy. I wish it would behave up to the standards of a normal Time Suck sponsor, man. I don't know a lot about wrestling either, but it does seem like there should be more to wrestling than getting a cock mash in your face and just disposing poorly of bodies. So I hope at the very least you got that free limp straw water bottle, and I hope you enjoy it. So sorry, Zach. Wish I could give you a refund myself, man. Good to hear, though, about David Icke's subs and suds, though. Look forward to that lizard sandwich. I'm going to have to grab one of those. And I look forward to more updates from you cool sons of bitches during next week's Suck. Thanks, Time Suckers.
Thanks, Time Suckers. I needed that.
We all did.
Have a fantastic week, suckers. Don't worry that next week's topic is going to suck in the wrong way. It's just focus on being the cult of the curious. Don't drink any radioactive water. Don't play in a glowing sandbox. And keep on sucking.